All right. Well, after much fanfare from the first 2 weeks, unfortunately, a little bit of overindulging on Super Bowl Sunday, and we weren't able to record last Sunday. But we're back, right back at you this week. Episode 3, finally getting it going. A lot of people have been asking for it. Was wondering where we were last week. Just busy schedules this week. It's springtime. I'm starting track. Coach Salazar is deep in the basketball playoffs. And just a busy week for everybody. Super Bowl and all kinds of stuff going on. We didn't get a chance to sit down and do the podcast. But here we go. Episode 3 this week.
Here we go. Here we go.
All right, so we're starting episode 3 of the Action Podcast with your host Martin Alvarez and co-host Ivan Salazar, and we're back finally getting a chance to play. I guess it's a week later, so two Monday overs, Monday morning quarterbacks as far as the Super Bowl is concerned. It was a great game. The first half was not as exciting as we would have hoped, but it definitely was. I think there was 50-something points scored in the second half, and it turned out to be a great game, a defensive battle early on, and then later on it came down to the wire. Your thoughts on the Super Bowl last week?
Well, let's first start with logistics, Coach. I'm gonna make a side point here. Hopefully, some superintendents are hearing this. I really feel like Saturday would be a great day for Super Bowl. That's out of our control, but let's see what we can control. So last year, I was a part of some innovative approach from Southsend ISD, and it ended up being Monday after the Super Bowl was off for all employees of Southsend Independent School District. So they really earmarked it because of Super Bowl holiday. So I would say that that would be a great jumping point that maybe another superintendent, superintendents across Texas could take note, because I really feel like that would be a great way to start off with max production on a Tuesday.
Well, I mean, and not just in education, or, you know, I think the Super Bowl, the day after the Super Bowl should be a holiday. Isn't it something like 125 million people watch the Super Bowl, something like that? So roughly one out of every four homes in America is watching the Super Bowl. And that's because every place that's probably watching the Super Bowl, there's more than just one person sitting there watching this game. So,
absolutely.
You know, I know at my house, it was about 10 people. And so, you know, there's just so many people that watch this game that it should be a national holiday the next day after the Super Bowl. Give us a chance to recover. Give us a chance to absorb it. You know, because, and then, I mean, the game started at 5:30, but didn't end till 10:15.
No, you know, it was definitely a long game. I will say that I was excited. I really feel like that the added play, the overtime added value to the game, you know, early on, it was a little bit of a snore fest, if you will. I really feel like that's what transcended it to be a much better game than probably initially starting. So. I would say to begin with, like, I thought the San Francisco 49ers did an excellent job. Their front four really established the game. I thought defensively there were some juggernauts that really were, you know, adamant about making it their tempo, their physical presence, and I was really impressed early on with their play.
Yeah, defensively, I mean, I think the Chase Young trade was a huge deal. Early in the season, I mean, to have him and then Bosa on the other side is just, you know, incredible. Excellent defense on both sides of the ball. But I was definitely most impressed by Chris Jones and the Kansas City secondary. I mean, they made those wide receivers and even Christian McCaffrey at times look pretty pedestrian. You know, where all season they had, you know, Ayuk, they have all these weapons, Debo Samuels, Kittles, a lot of weapons on that side that were shut down pretty much, you know, for the most part in that game. I mean, in fact, I think it was Jennings. I think the wide receiver from San Francisco had most of the receptions and the bigger plays. But I think it came down to the overtime and just an understanding of how the overtime worked. I don't think that I think that Shanahan came back and said that some of the players were unsure of what the rules were. And even as I was watching it, I was kind of like, okay, what's going on here? You know, because it's been so long since we've had an overtime game in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But they didn't want it to be the whole Buffalo Bills versus Kansas City Chiefs from a few years ago where, you know, it just sucked to end the way that it ended because both teams were playing so well, both quarterbacks were playing so well. But I think the play of the game comes down to is on that that third and goal down there in overtime. They don't block Chris Jones. And Chris Jones said at first he thought it was a screen and realized they had just not blocked him. And he put pressure on Purdy. He had to throw it away. They kicked the field goal and you give the ball back to Mahomes. And I mean, is Mahomes now a top five quarterback of all time? I would say so.
I mean, offensively, he did drag this team, you know, to the playoffs. They were struggling early on. I mean, his receivers couldn't catch a ball. Matter of fact, I still don't feel overly confident on the receiving core that he has. Rashee Rice, you know, had a solid game. You know, early on, Kelce was limited and ended up with 9 receptions for 93 yards. But
all in the second half, yeah.
Most of it was in the second. 8 of the receptions were in the second half, I believe. You know, he only had 1 reception, 1 yard in the first half. Yeah. You know, yeah. You know, guy that we really enjoy watching, Isaiah Pacheco. I really felt that he was out of place. You know, not as explosive as he needed to be with how aggressive San Francisco was. I really felt in hindsight, you know, using Jerick McKinnon. McKinnon is a lot more explosive and. And they had a lot of, you know, I want to say the personnel that he had, 4 receivers, 1 running back, you know. So I want to say that there were some opportunities to be able to, you know, catch him on the run. And you know, Andy Reid did not utilize that. But at the end of the day, they did end up pulling it out. I really was impressed. You talked about the defense, you know, Trent McDuffie. The sticky coverage that he had, you said, you know, Brandon Ayuk, you know, Deebo Samuel were pretty much held to non-existent in this ball game, and a lot of that had to do with Trent McDuffie, man. I mean, there were some moments that he came up absolutely gargantuan on his, you know, sticky coverage, you know, timing of being in phase and at the last second strafing the football.
Yeah, no, definitely. I thought that he had an excellent game. You know, Pacheco, I think kind of maybe the moment was a little too big for him. It's kind of how I felt. He fumbled twice, one he lost. He, you know, it just seems, you know, I mean, of course, you know, this is what his second season, I believe.
And he is his sophomore season.
Mm-hmm. So he's going to be, you know, with Mahomes as his quarterback, they're going to be there a few more times. I mean, he's chasing Tom Brady at this point. But yeah, I thought McDuffie and the secondary for Kansas City, great job by the defense coordinator and defense staff for Kansas City. Just I mean, putting together a great game plan. I thought Brock Purdy played well. I don't think he made a lot of mistakes, which is just kind of what you need at times, you know, when you have guys around you. All leading up to the Super Bowl, you know, I saw Cam Newton was probably on every sports show. Because he had made that statement about Brock Purdy being a game manager and not a game changer, you know. And he was actually on the Warren Sapp podcast. I think it's called 4th and 1 podcast with Warren Sapp. And, I mean, Warren went at him and was like, you know, he's like, well, what do you think about my quarterback, you know, which he called Brady Johnson his quarterback, you know. And he was like, he was a game manager, you know, whatever. And he's like, so they went at it for a while and then they finally like, Cam was like, look, man, I didn't come on your podcast. You know, like, I respect you. Like, I'm not going to get into that. Like, you know, he's like, but what I'm, and then he explained it, what he meant, you know, that not saying that a game manager is not a bad thing, you know, except that there are certain quarterbacks that are game changers and the Tom Brady's, the, you know, Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, when the ball was in his hand and it was crunch time, he made things happen when there was nothing there. And I think that was the difference between in that game was we had a quarterback that was a great game manager, and Patrick Mahomes is a game changer, you know. And
We don't want to be sensationalists. I don't think Cam was being a sensationalist as well. You know, there is a lot to be said about the game managing aspect of the game. There are not a lot of top tier quarterbacks, you know, tier one, like the Patrick Mahomes, like, you know, we mentioned Tom Brady. You know, Lamar Jackson probably wouldn't be considered a game manager, but he didn't manage much against Kansas City's defense. So I just think he was just lending, you know, some credence to being a transcendent player that he was, still trying to remain relevant and probably a little, you know, hurt that he is not on one of the rosters right now. I do agree with Cam and many people that are on his camp that say that he is a worthy starting quarterback, but he also brings a certain level of cachet. Like he's really, his name is bigger than some of these teams that we're talking about here.
And
if he's not producing or if he's taken away from the entire team mission, then I can see where he feels a little slighted, and that's where he would come out and say something like that to protect a little bit of his background and what he brought to the table and such. But, you know, I don't really feel that Brock Purdy is a game manager. I think he's a solid quarterback. He's still growing. He's still learning. He's going to be an awesome force to be reckoned with, especially if they're able to maintain a lot of the weapons that they have now.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's kind of what he was talking about was, you know, and Warren Sapp went at him and was like, well, you're the quarterback that wouldn't pick up the fumble when it was on the ground. Like, he's like, what kind of quarterback are you, you know? And he was like, whoa, man, like, you know, like, I didn't come on here to get disrespected, you know? He's like, I respect you too much or whatever. It was a great interview if you get a chance to watch it. But there was no slap to being a game manager. I mean, you know, Joe Montana, probably one of the best game managers and, you know, or, you know, just knowing what's going on in the situational stuff. And, but I think what we're looking at right now with Patrick Mahomes, I mean, like you said, he carried that team all the way to the Super Bowl. I mean,
he's got that it factor. He improvises tremendously.
Big time.
And, I really love what he brings to the table. I sent a video, to you. I didn't hear about Patrick Mahomes. I knew that he was at Texas Tech, never watched Texas Tech play at the time, but I remember I sent a video to you about him and Baker Mayfield's game that they had there.
Insane. In Lubbock.
It was an insane game. They both put up monster video game numbers. And you know, who would have predicted this, right? Like, you know, at one point, Andy Reid had Alex Smith as the starting quarterback, and I believe they were 14-2 going into the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken, that year. And they got bounced from the playoffs. And it was, you know, the foresight of Andy Reid to say, hey, we're not going to, you know, renew Alex Smith, and we're going to roll with Patrick Mahomes. And they haven't really looked back since. I mean, I know they lost to the GOAT Tom Brady, you know, Tampa Bay in the playoffs and such. You know, on a side note, let's talk about Tom Brady. He was a game manager when he first started off, you know,
and
he just morphed into this, the GOAT, you know? So yeah, there's no, I don't want to say there's no insult in saying that there's a game manager aspect at the end of the day. I think if we understand that as coaches, it's an extension of a coach on the field.
Right.
And a lot of these guys are trusted for that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, but like, you know, 16-3 in the playoffs, 3 Super Bowls. I mean, he's, you know, and he's not done. I mean, you know, he's not done yet. And he said that I'm chasing Brady, you know. And I mean, the way they're playing and the way Andy Reid's just offensively speaking, I mean, it just, you know, they're gonna be in plenty more Super Bowls. I think. I mean, it's gonna be theirs to lose every year, as far as I'm concerned. You know, because and even like I was talking to my son about it, and I was like, well, they had a really crappy year this year, and he was like, Dad, they won 11 games, like, you know. And I was like, dang, it didn't really seem like that, because it, you know, we're so used to them winning 12, 13 games a season, the Chiefs. But it, at the end of the day, having that guy at quarterback is the difference. I mean,
that guy at quarterback and having Chris Jones at defensive line, Steve Spagnuolo as a defensive coordinator, the secondary, the way that they had, you know, if they're able to keep that continuity defensively, you know, and then they add a piece to like you know, compliment Rashee Rice and compliment, you know, let's not get it twisted. Even though Travis Kelce is very productive, you know, I would say that he's going to probably be on the back end of his career as far as production goes. So having somebody to compliment and really take a lot off of his plate is going to be essential as they move forward.
Yeah, no, and I think they'll get better. They draft really well. I mean, I think the sky's the limit for Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he's only 28 years old and already has 3 Super Bowls. I mean, you know, as a Cowboys fan, there's a big difference when the lights are on playoffs. And, you know, as much as I like Dak Prescott, there's a huge difference between Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott. There's a huge difference even between Brock Purdy and Dak Prescott. But, you know, we'll save that one for another day, I suppose. But a very entertaining game, definitely entertaining game. Was one for the books. I always say, as long as it's entertaining, if the Cowboys aren't there, and it was definitely an entertaining game.
I do have to say, man, as a previous running back, I really enjoyed seeing Christian McCaffrey work.
Yes,
you know, 80
yes.
yards receiving, 80 yards rushing. Yeoman's work, max touches. I mean, that guy had 30 touches and 160 yards, and it was impressive.
If they win the game, he's the MVP, no doubt. No doubt about that.
That and Jawan Jennings came to play. He had, you know, two really great plays that really stood out that, you know, really could have made an argument that he could have been a Super Bowl MVP.
That's true. And another weapon now that they have. Like.
Yeah, like they need some more.
Like they need more, right? I mean, you know.
Let's talk about Kyle Shanahan, man. You know, he's got a lot of backlash on just basically the logistics of how everything, you know, transpired. You know, obviously there's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking. And it's still going on. You know, we're several days removed from the Super Bowl, and we're still talking about Kyle Shanahan and whether he knew the rules or he didn't know the rules.
Right.
You know, what do you think about that situation and how it unfolded?
Well, you know, they have all kinds of quality control and all kinds of guys in the booths and on the field for them not to understand the overtime rule, you know, or, you know, and he came back and said, you know, well, we wanted the ball first. We felt we had momentum. If we score, then they have to score a touchdown. And so we felt that was the best thing for us, was to put our offense back out there on the field. To me, the smart thing to do, and of course this is second guessing and playing two Mondays over quarterback, but I like my defense out there first, because then you know if they stop them on a field goal, now you know you need to score a touchdown. And honestly, in the overtime also, was there's really not no time. Both teams get a possession.
What do you say to this, Alvy? Their defense was on 11 straight plays in a minute and a half to close the regulation. Mm-hmm. You know, that was probably something that was equated into the formula of that decision. You know,
they said they had their analytics guy, and that's what they said, was that it was that was what their, you know, analytics said was to take the ball. You know, but maybe that was part of it. But then they ended up, what it was like a 12 play drive. The winning drive was a 12 or 14 play drive, I think, there at the end. I don't know.
Now, here's one thing about analytics. And you know, I would think that we're progressive coaches, you know, and that we really are well informed with analytics and huddle. Huddle, the Huddle platform has been tremendous for us and
how we make
decisions and as coaches. But, you know, at what point, you know, do we go with our gut? Because, yeah, analytics may say that, but analytics is not going to understand there's Patrick Mahomes on the other side of the field.
Well, it's like Campbell when he went for it 3 times for the 2-point conversion in that game. A lot of people dogged him about it, but that's what he felt he needed to do, you know, and he got 3 shots at it. Not kicking the field goals in the playoff game, might have came back and bit him a little bit, but yeah, at some point I guess you just take your gut feeling of what you think that it needs to be. What Shanahan said though was that it was their analytics guys did say that that's what they needed to do, and you know, it turned out not to be the right decision, I guess, if you're gonna, you know, but again, it comes back around to, you're gonna give the ball to Patrick Mahomes to finish the game? Like, No, yeah. I'd rather have the ball in my quarterback's hand and let him finish the game, you know. But, you know.
Here's what's tough about his situation, Kyle Shanahan, is that as a coordinator once and as a head coach twice, he's gone into the second half with a 10-point lead and has lost the ballgame. And that's kind of the tough pill to swallow. And we can talk about analytics, this and that, but he's had a 10-point lead going in these three different ball games and does not have a Super Bowl to say that this is on my resume.
And this is the second Super Bowl in 4 years, I think, right? That he's lost. He's not a bad coach, though, I don't think. I mean, obviously, you know, San Francisco has been the best team in the NFC the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, really. And they just keep getting better. You add defensive ends. Seems like they have defensive ends to throw away, you know. Maybe their interior defensive linemen need to get some more of a run stopper up inside. Fred Warner, the way they use their fullback, they actually use a fullback offensively, which I really enjoy watching, you know.
You talk about Fred Warner, he's a beast, but man, that moment when Dre Greenlaw went out and how devastated Fred Warner was, you know, from the moment watching his teammate, rupture his Achilles to him sitting on the bench and Bosa coming over and comforting him, man, like he took that really hard. And I think that was really a pivotal point of how San Francisco was working.
Because Greenlaw was playing really well up until that point. And just a freak thing. He goes out there. He's excited to go out there. I think he kind of jumps up to get the possession change and blows an Achilles, you know. Apparently it had been crazy. It had been a lingering injury that he had had for a couple of weeks. It had been kind of nagging, but it wasn't anything that they thought was significant enough. But I mean, Achilles are just a crazy thing, you know. And I mean, he jumps up a few times, getting on the field, getting himself hype, and just goes down. Man, that was horrible to see. That was
the worst, man. I really feel bad for him, and just for the moment that happens in. I mean, it's kind of now it's out of his control. I mean, we kind of talk to our players, right? Control what you can control, and you get dealt one of those cards, man. It's a tough blow for sure, and you know our thoughts and prayers for him for a speedy recovery. But that was just tough to watch, and obviously how everybody responded was probably a little bit of taking the sale out of their sales, I should say.
Yeah, no, that was tough to watch.
What else stood out for you, Alvin? I mean, we had a fantastic halftime show. You know, I don't know if it was the best, you know, but it definitely there's a lot of bangers on there. That was one of the ones that I really enjoyed. Usher obviously speaks to our time. Us growing up and there was a lot of bangers there's a lot of, you know, musical guests, you know, like Ludacris, Lil Jon, Alicia Keys, you know,
star-studded. But it's still nothing compares when Dr. Dre, I mean, to me, that's still the best Super Bowl halftime show. I'm sure people would argue with that, but the Dr. Dre one to me was the best, you know. But
Dre and Prince for me were probably the best ones. You know, singing Purple Rain while it's raining.
Yeah.
You know, that was dope, man. That was super dope. But I did enjoy this show. Man, somebody should have tossed him a towel, though. You know, he was drenched.
Well, he's was old, putting in man. Work, man. He's old, man. He's kind of.
He don't look that old, coach. He was putting in work.
He's like 55 or something, you know?
I mean, when you're old, you say he's old, but if you feel old, man, you ain't taking your shirt out like that with max confidence. And that's what he did.
God dang, dude. I was embarrassed when they did that. They turned that TV off, man.
It was definitely a good show, man. It brought back a lot of memories. You know, he did get paid just slightly over $600, you know, for that. But I'm hearing that he's going to be on the north end of $100 million that he's going to earn. I'm a prime music guy.
Yeah.
And as I was making my selections in music, I was noticing, you know, trending on some of his songs.
Great music.
And so obviously he's, you know, getting royalties off of that. And I'm hearing he's having positive traction with his upcoming tour sales and such. So that's pretty interesting to know.
He's got a residency in Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken.
Really? I did not know that.
I think I heard something about that where he does a residency show in Las Vegas. It was great. I mean, in fact, it was one of the first Super Bowls in a while where you were kind of looking forward to the halftime show, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know when we were outside, we were making some chicken wings on the grill, and as we were, you know, outside celebrating before the game, that's one of the things, like, oh, what song do you think he's gonna play, you know, what mm-hmm. you know. So yeah, it was a good time, man. It's what that game is supposed to be, right? It's the biggest game of the year, and I think it lived up to the hype, and it was a great time, great halftime show. The commercials still, to me, are not as good as they used to be when I was younger, it seems, or maybe I just, you know, and I think that my favorite is probably Kanye West's 22nd, where he goes down there and gave his website out, and then he sold his T-shirts for $20. Apparently, apparently overnight he made like $13 million selling $20 T-shirts, which are not, there's really nothing to the T-shirt. I went on the website myself, so he got,
yeah,
you know.
Well, he's a culture icon, so you know, yeah, that was going to be a positive spin for him, no matter how foolish he gets. But I would say my favorite one was the Christopher Walken one, you know, mm-hmm. where everybody was mimicking him, and we all know that he's kind of one of those characters that a lot of folks like to imitate. Yeah, man, that was pretty good, man. But you know, I was waiting for those, you know, like the Budweiser commercials where they, you know, it's real sentimental type. I didn't see any of those, although we did get a Budweiser commercial towards the end of the game. So I was waiting for something like that. I think the writing, you know, is lacking a little bit. You know, some of the creativity of previous Super Bowl commercials have been much more stellar. But you know, I mean, I don't know why that would be though. If you're lacking in writing, it's a $7 million spot. You figure you put your best foot forward.
You put everything into that commercial because you want it to be remembered for a Super Bowl commercial, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, I mean, now if you're watching YouTube or whatever, it pops up every 2 minutes, you know, an ad. So it's, you know, I guess maybe there's just more room for advertisement now. I don't know. I don't really understand why. It doesn't seem that they put as much into the commercials as they used to, but that was always one of the things, watch the commercial and try to see which one was the best and the funniest and which stood out. You know, I do want to watch Deadpool 3 now. That one was pretty good.
One of the funniest things is Ryan Reynolds is, you know, sending an IG out of, where's my wife? Has anybody seen my wife? And she's up there sitting with
Taylor Swift.
That was pretty funny, man. Yeah, you know, but you know, yeah, definitely was you know, I want to say it was solid. You know, mm-hmm. If we were giving them a rating, I would say C+. You know, overall, I would say that, you know, B+ for the halftime show. You know, that it was entertaining. Skating while singing, you know, I could see why my boy was sweating a little bit, man. But but I thought for the most part was pretty cool, man. And we had to have some good conversations about it. I do have an audio video production class, and we had some conversations about, you know, just what the kids enjoyed about the Super Bowl and such. And it wasn't, you know, without any controversy, you know.
Right.
You know, what do you think about that Andy Reid and Travis Kelce situation, man? I know a lot of folks really, you know, took to social media about that and boisterous displeasure the next day.
I mean, you never want to see an athlete act like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think that he intended to be any disrespect. I mean, Andy Reid is in his 60s, so you know, if a 6'4", you know, 260-pound, you know, tight end goes and bumps you, you're probably gonna lose your balance. So I think it may have been more than what it looked like, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think he was just—I don't know if he was calling for the ball. I didn't really, you know. But you don't want to see that. I mean, apparently Andy Reid didn't really think much of it. And neither did Kelce. I think it just kind of, we blew it up more than probably what it is. But no, you don't want to see it, you know, especially when young athletes are watching. That's not the way you react to a situation. You're obviously entitled to voice your opinion, and it's a mm-hmm. way different when you're dealing with grown men, you know, as opposed to teenagers and young adults. But No, I didn't. I didn't enjoy seeing that. I didn't think that was a way to act. Apparently, like I said, Andy Reid didn't think much of it, and neither did Kelsey. Rightfully he got some backlash for it. Now, if he's Antonio Brown and he does that, I mean, is he out of the league? You know, in a couple of games.
Oh, for sure. I think there's certain dynamics that some folks are not going to talk about. Right. I think, you know, that's number one. Had it been an African-American player that was demonstrative like that, mm-hmm. how would it have been taken? You know, there is a, you know, catch 22 in certain respects and such. But I will say this, you know, being involved with sports for such a long time, there is going to be some conflict. You know, there's going to be some conflict at times between player and coach, between players. I would go back and really analyze, you know, are we teaching we're concerned about role model, you know, and how that trickle down effects is going to be. Like, at the end of the day, parents, you're in control of that, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, the messaging that we give to our youth at home, and then obviously as coaches, the messaging that we provide, you know, in those confines, like, I think we control a lot of that and really can nip things in the bud. When it comes to that, I'm not overly concerned. I think these are two grown men that love each other. They were probably passionate about how disappointing the first half was. I know for sure, you know, I would say that Travis Kelce really acted out of line. You know, there's no denying that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you and I, as men being involved in sports, know that conflict happens a lot more than it's actually seen.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just not the way you want, but you're right. I mean, that's a conversation then you have with your son at home. Be like, you know, that's not how you act towards a coach. That's not respectful. That's not how you handle a situation, you know?
And let me say that I'm not condoning that behavior at all.
Right, right.
But as you said, right, it's important that we're having these conversations mm-hmm. because, you know, at the end of the day, man, like, you know, there is sportsmanship, there is class, there is a way how to treat the people that you should hold in high regard and the reverence you show them, like a coach, like a teacher, like a parent. Like, right. you know, I don't condone acting a fool in front of your people that, you know, are put in charge of you. And so that's definitely goes without saying, but, you know, it is what it is, man. These are men, that these are multimillionaires, have a little spat in a highly televised game.
Yeah, and it almost looked to me too when he bumped him and kind of Andy Reid lost his balance that he was like, oh dang, like, you know, it's almost like he caught himself in a way. Mm-hmm. I think it looked maybe worse than what it was because Andy Reid lost his balance, you know. But you know, you know, it is what it is, you know. And obviously they squashed it and didn't feel it was a big deal, but it's a great learning opportunity for young guys, you know, on how to treat your coaches, how to act. But yeah, no, I didn't enjoy seeing that at all.
Let's close the Super Bowl edition, man. What do you think? Should we expect the Kansas City Chiefs back here in this show?
As long as they have Patrick Mahomes, I think they're going to be back in the mix every year. You know, a team that really wasn't expected to, you know, they were the third seed, and you know, I almost feel like, you know, in a way it's like the Spurs when they were really good and they would kind of coast a little bit in the regular season. And then once the tournament started, they would turn it up. Mm. And I feel that's what Patrick Mahomes, you know, I feel that's what happened with that team, is all of a sudden they were like, okay, now it's for real. Mm. And I mean, the defense raised their level. Patrick Mahomes raised his level. Isaiah Pacheco raised his level. I mean, everybody raised their level with the understanding that now it's crunch time, you know, and, you know, which is exactly what we're having trouble with as a Cowboys fan, right? Is that big game comes and nobody raises their level, and, you know, the situation is what it is. But I felt collectively as an organization, they were like, okay, now it's for real. You know, and they took care of business. All three of the games in the playoffs. I mean, they, you know, they handled their own. And I think year in, year out, I mean, you expect Patrick Mahomes to be a favorite for the MVP. Now he's taking himself to a whole other level. I mean, you know, winning two is significant, obviously, but now winning three, and you know,
with the potential of a three-peat next year.
Yes, back to back. I mean, nobody's ever done that, you know. And yeah, I mean, the Chiefs are the ones to beat. You know, the Chiefs are the ones to beat, and teams are going to get better. You know, but I mean, this was not a team that you would say was better than the team previous year for the Chiefs, and they still won the Super Bowl because they had Patrick Mahomes. And as long as they have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, you know, I mean, they're going to be in the mix every year.
Well, the chances are of them coming back, because you mentioned the reasoning of Patrick Mahomes. I feel like that's very plausible. I really feel like the AFC is in a good spot right now. In general, I think, you know, Baltimore will take another leap with maturity. I want to see how Miami responds. You know, they were hot the majority of the year. They lost a lot defensively, that they didn't have a defensive punch, you know, in playoff time. But they definitely have the weapons offensively to, you know, to challenge. There is a lot of situations I feel like that will improve. But again, they're the champs, you know. To beat the man, you gotta beat the man, as Ric Flair would say. So, until that happens, until we see some evidence of other teams rising up, and challenging them, you know, the Bills ain't going away. You know, right. Josh Allen is one of the best quarterbacks. I would say probably second best, you know, if not, you know, third best, you know, behind Lamar and Patrick. But, you know, and then there's that man, Aaron Rodgers, coming back, you know, with a lot of weapons, great defense there in the Jets. And I'm hopeful that those guys can take a leap and, you know, kind of take a, you know, I mean, New York has been, you know, misery, you know, for such a long time. Yeah. And I would love to see them, you know, kind of have some, a little bit of a resurgence, or some surgence, I should say, not resurgence, a surgence. and maybe ascend a little bit, but there's a lot of great teams out there, and of course I'm hopeful that my Vikings kind of figure things out, and of course you're hopeful that your Cowboys kind of figure things out.
And they just hired a former Viking and as their defensive coordinator.
He's a dude, man.
Mike Zimmer's, you know, coming back. So.
He's an excellent coach, excellent defensive mind. Really enjoyed the time that, you know, he served in Minnesota, and you know, I think for us, you know, it was time for us to have a, you know, offensive minded head coach. And that was kind of like the, you know, the whole cause behind his firing and such. But you guys got a good one, man, and I think that, you know, you'll see a lot of steps. They highly respect each other, him and McCarthy, from their battles in NFC North, and so I think it'll be a great situation for Cowboy fans just to watch it unfold.
Yeah, and he's saying the right things. He said they got to fix the run defense, and run stopping is the priority, and building defensive line and linebackers. So no, hopefully they can get they got to get over that hump. They got to raise their level for the playoffs. I mean, it's great winning 12 games a season. I'm not going to laugh at that, but when it counts, it's what we got to win. And hopefully he's what we need to get over that hump, you know?
Yes, sir.
Yep. All right, so this past Saturday, we thought about recording our podcast last Saturday. Of course, then we wouldn't have been able to get, you know, we've got some Super Bowl preview, but not really. We just spent 37 minutes talking about the Super Bowl, so and the NFL. But we attended the South Texas Coaches Association clinic and social over at DA, Coach Daryl Andrus, athletic director at Jordanton, over at his ranch. It was a great time of fellowship. There was coaches from several different staffs there. Just a good chance to talk ball and just kind of talk to coaches. And it's a great organization. It was started a few years ago by area coaches. Coach Andrus, Coach Darby House, who's now at Nacogdoches, who was at Poteet, Coach Martinez from Natalia, and several other coaches, Coach Luna from Poth, and several other coaches from the area. It was a chance, you know, not to diss the San Antonio All-Star game, but it covers such a wide area and larger schools at that sometimes the small school kids kind of get lost in the shuffle. Even when they're selected, they get, you know, minimal amount of playing time and things like that, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. So they started an association just to have an all-star game, really, and to give kids, seniors, an opportunity to play in another game from all the area, smaller schools in the area. And it's turned out to be a really great game. I mean, last year it went into overtime. I've had the ability to coach it the last 2 years at the staff in Poteet and now the staff in Natalia. And it was it's a great experience, and the best kids in South Texas, really, you know, that just love football. And it's incredible what those kids are capable of doing. But for a lot of them, it's the only time, last time they'll get to play. And then they've expanded it this last couple of years to include an all-star volleyball game, all-star basketball, girls and boys, all-star basketball game. And they give away over $20,000 in scholarships. It's a great organization. For those coaches out there, athletic directors, if your staffs are listening, it's a minimal fee for your entire staff to be part and to participate in those things. And definitely look into it and contact Coach Martinez or Daryl Andrus or Jeff Luna at Poth, because it's a really great organization and that luckily I've been a part of. But there was some great fellowship. I mean, it was a good time. You know, the stakes were on point, and a lot of camaraderie and getting to talk to coaches and talk football and things like that. You know, this is the first time you've attended, Coach. I think this is the first time you've been a part of the South Texas Coach Association. What did you think?
Coach, one thing that, you know, to begin with, what resonated with me is, let me give you a little bit of a backstory from my experience. Being a San Antonio guy, inner city, Lanier High School, my senior year, we had a really great campaign, ended in the first round and a really exciting game against Beeville, lost by 2 points. But I would say that I had a really, you know, great year with my offensive line. Myself, I had a you know, grand total of 1,700 yards and 15 touchdowns, second team all-city nod, but I didn't get selected to that all-star game.
Really?
Somebody fumbled the ball there. I don't know why. Yeah. It's not that I think about it every day, wink, wink, but I will tell you, I bring that perspective because I know how much that can do for somebody's confidence, you know, participating in a game like that. That was a little bit more of a muse, not being able to participate in that and using it as fuel to the fire. But, you know, I know for a fact that, you know, there's a lot of kids that come from sub 5A, you know, we're talking about, you know, anywhere from 1A all the way to, you know, to 4A that are in the South Texas region that don't get a lot of playing time. You know, they get overshadowed from, you know, the 6A, 5A schools that are, you know, extremely popular here in the greater San Antonio area. And so they don't get a really fair shake for whatever reason. You know, as that transpires, and so that experience kind of doesn't seem too great for a lot of individuals that were selected for that. Well, now you have this organization that we're talking about here, the South Texas Coaches Association, that founded, you know, these all-star games, and it gives these student athletes an opportunity to, you know, maybe continue on their mm-hmm. education, you know, as a student athlete, or be the last time to celebrate with some of the best in their area, you know, some of the best from the small towns all around the greater San Antonio area in South Texas. So that's what really jumped out to me initially, is that what a wonderful opportunity. Scholarships are behind that. So a little bit of money being thrown at a individual that is well deserving is pretty awesome. The fellowship, man, like, you know, meeting some of the coaches, talking and chopping it up with them, networking at that clinic was pretty awesome, man. You know, there's a lot of wonderful people that do yeoman's work at a lot of these, you know, small school environments. And if you know anything about that, man, you're rolling up your sleeves and getting your hands dirty doing work at all different areas of the school. So these are men and women that coach in these places that that are not afraid of work, that, you know, really, you know, embody servant leadership. And that's what we were around on Saturday, Albie. And I really was just soaking that up and enjoying the leadership from, you know, guys like DA. You know, Jordanton does a great job. You know, they have an outstanding program. Jeff Luna, you know, Poth does a great job and have an outstanding program. And of course, you know, one of our mentor friends, you know, Ilian Martinez, who's now going from Natalia and has assumed the direction of the Floresville program. These guys are you know, pivotal in getting this thing going. And it was just a great thing to be a part of, for sure.
Yeah, no, congratulations to Coach Martinez on his new adventure at Floresville as he takes over as athletic director this next week. Excited for him to get that opportunity, and he definitely will be missed at Natalia. But yeah, definitely, you know, like you said, it was a lot of small school guys, you know, and in fact, Coach Andres, you know, DA, as we like to call him, he brought it up about how he had attended a panel at the DFW clinic, for small school coaches, and, you know, where they talked about the tribulations of being a small school, you know, getting coaches in the period and getting, you know, admin to buy into stuff, or you know, all the stuff that happens at a small school where you have coaches maybe coaching multiple sports at the same time, you know, so a lot of things that go into small school that sometimes maybe you don't really think about, you know, but like you said, some of the toughest, hardest working people at small schools, you know, where they have to do everything, and also getting you know, he made a great point in talking about trying to get youth to be coaches, you know, because we're obviously not going to do this thing forever, but getting young people that you see in the hallways that have the ability to be coaches. You know, he mentioned kids that even aren't, you know, they're not athletes, but they have that kind of coach mentality and right. Are part of the team that aren't necessarily players for them, but having sitting down with them and drinking a cup of coffee and saying, hey, have you ever thought about being a coach, and kind of helping them, guide them that way, you know, because, you know, they're people are leaving the business in droves, you know, partly, you know, because of the amount of work and things like that, you know, that we can get these young guys to come in and be a part and mentor them the right way to where they're, you know, this thing is going to become theirs at some point, you know. You know, we're the old coaches now, and that's kind of, it's one of the things over the last couple of years that I've kind of started to realize more and more, is that I am the old guy in the staff, you know, where they are the older guys, and sometimes those guys, the younger guys, look for us for mentorship. But it's finding those guys early on, and identifying them. I mean, you know, there's a lot of kids that right now, where we coach, where I'm like, you know, that kid would be a great coach. Like, you mm-hmm. know, if that's something that he's interested in, you know. But sometimes, you know, a lot of, you know, we you've talked about having seniors have plans, you know, speaking with them about coaching and things like that, and just getting them set up to have a plan, you know, and if that's something they're interested in, then to develop that, you know. And I thought that was a great talk by DA, very impassioned speech about getting the youth involved in coaching and you know, yeah, it was a good time, great fellowship. And it's always a good time seeing those guys and talking to them and experiencing them. I mean, when you can sit there and listen to Coach Luna and Coach Andres talk about their offensive schemes and things like that, I mean, just, you know, the passion they have for what they do is incredible.
Yeah, Coach Andres really, you know, hit the nail on the head. We do need to, you know, establish a pipeline of people replacing us at some point. You know, now if they join our ranks right now, we'll be able to kind of help mentor them and show them the ropes of how things are done. But eventually, you know, we're going to fade off, and that place will be, wherever we're at, we'll still be running, you know, and we want to leave it in great hands. And so that is crucial. We talked about this yesterday about, you know, something when I set my portfolio up of having a senior exit plan and making sure that our kids are well aware and transition to life after high school. And a lot of times I've observed in programs where seniors are done, they're done. like, you know, transfer them out of the athletic period, or let's kind of limit, if they're not going to participate in any sport, it's kind of limit some of the things they're going to do in the class. And I don't really like that, because there's so many things that we could do for them to help them and prepare for the next phase of their life, and including convincing them to be a part of this profession. What a rewarding profession. You know, you talked about kids that come to mind. Marcus, you know, is a kid that comes to mind that I feel it would be a wonderful coach. You know, he's one of the best teammates I've ever been around that we get to work with on a consistent basis. And so people like him need to be aware of what it takes to become a coach, the steps, you know, and just be fed, you know, not so much fed, but like given these options of this is what's available to you and this is how you would get it done. And we need to be advocates of our program, men out there, men and women that are listening to this podcast, that are in the coaching industry, that we definitely need to establish a pipeline that, you know, the next wave of professionals are going to take over for us.
Yeah, no, I think it was a great speech about the, you know, not just small school, but just, you know, the amount of lack of coaches coming into the business, you know, and
well, coach, it's not even small school, you know. I've worked in inner city long enough to know that some of the things that are ill, you know, a smaller school, are in some inner city districts, you know, guys not being in the athletic period, you know, not having the right support in place, you know, the coming up with multiple resources, you know, being creative with that. Like, these are all things that also test the inner city as well. And it definitely doesn't make it appealing to work in a place like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, having our ducks in a row, and, you know, as they say, dotting your I's and crossing the T's, is important for us to be advocates of our program and establish a pipeline.
Yeah, and most definitely. And you know, it's something that's not easy, and you know, but it's extremely rewarding, and you get summers, for the most part, you get summers off, you know, and all the major holidays. Somewhere. So it's a great selling point, I guess. I thought it was a great time, and I look forward to the All-Star Games coming up here in the spring, and we'll keep y'all posted on that, and we want to try to see if we can get Coach Andrus on at some point on our podcast. I think he definitely agreed to, and definitely an advocate for our profession, and so, you know, we're going to try to get him on as soon as possible. So as the springtime is in full go, definitely a busy time of the year, you know, our kids for sure, right now are, you know, they're doing ag, they're doing baseball, softball, there's, you know, powerlifting is still going on. Basketball is in the playoffs. Both the girls and the boys programs, we're in the playoffs, and thankfully we don't have to deal with soccer and tennis and all that other stuff. Golf is full swing right now, no pun intended. And then, of course, track season is going on. You know, we talked about we're both big track guys, obviously. Coach Salazar, a former head track coach, and I've been a head track coach for the last 10 years or so. It's one of the things that we're starting to notice, you know, is the benefits of track. The mental toughness that it builds, the self-resilience, you know, that's a lot of things that I tell my kids all the time when we're practicing, you know, because, you know, kids are very instant reward right now, you know, in our society, and track is not one of those sports where you're going to get instant gratification, and the workouts are grueling. You know, I was talking to a track coach at our practice meet the other day about how, you know, he used to, well, first of all, they used to be Saturday track meets. Almost Saturday track meets are almost non-existent now. They're very difficult to find. So you had the 5 days of workouts, you know, and Mondays were going to, you know, your quarter Mondays where you were going to, you know, you're going to get after it. And kids are not able to complete the workouts, or, you know, you're concerned about kids not wanting to do it after a while because of the grueling aspect of a track workout. But to me, there's no sport that we have that it benefits all other sports. You know, I mean, to be in shape, to get faster, to compete, the mental toughness aspect. I mean, I'm a big proponent of track, and it's something that we need to push, I think, especially in this you know, where we're headed in our country is the resilience, the self-resilience and the mental toughness and, you know, things that track teach you. And,
Well, Coach, I mean, I would say that we've never been in a time with more an abundance of entertainment options.
Right.
You know, so we have a group of kids that are gravitating to other spring sports. And then we have another group of kids that are gravitating to what's online, you know, and in Fortnite. And their phones and there's so many endless supply of entertainment options for our kiddos, man. My thing is that I'm really missing the grit of competitive people, you know, and ultimately, man, like I get it, you know, it's pretty overwhelming sometimes, man, when you know there is a dude that you're about to run that's probably in lane 4, probably in lane 5, that's just going to be head and shoulders above everybody else, you know. But the mindset of track is to overcome what you set yesterday, you know, to PR every day, every time you touch the track, every time you make a jump, every time you make a throw. You know, these are all things that should be in mind. And a lot of times, you know, I hear a lot of excuses about, well, I'm not going to win the thing. You know,
right.
Well, I'm not asking you to win the thing. I'm asking you to better yourself, better the time that you put before, you know, win the day, if you will. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm asking you to do. And so it's just really convenient and easy for kids to tap out and not address it head on. And listen, you know, I know I grew up as a fast person, you know, I wasn't always the fastest, Coach. We talked about this before, you know, my senior year, I go to a track meet, pull up, and I got to run against Daryl Williamson from Holmes and Cedric Griffin, you know, and in the next track meet, I got to run against Donnie Pinkerton, you know what I'm saying? And in district, I got to go against guys from Schertz Clemens and Sam right. Houston that are just, you know, phenomenal athletes, man. And so I get it. You know, it can be overwhelming, some of these men that you're facing, and for women, you know, some of these women that you're facing that are extremely talented. But the point about track is to establish some mental discipline, some grit, the competitive nature, to get some flexibility, some explosion involved right. into your approach. And this is what we're requiring of our athletes. This is not it's not a slouch sport, you know. You can't just donate a little bit of time here and be a part-time right. guy, you know. And so we're just kind of, you know, speaking out loud as an advocate for track. We know that there are some challenges from it, you know, trying to get kids out. And we got to stay vigilant with this, coaches, about making sure that our kids are participating in that. Because, you know, at the end of the day, there's a wonderful component to it when it comes to social component. You know, when you go to track meets and kids interact with somebody else from a different school, like those are all great things that you can pull from this wonderful sport.
Yeah, no. And I that's a great point you bring about the grit, you know, because it's amazing to see when the light comes on, the competitive light, you know, that comes on sometimes where you know, you're not necessarily, you're going out there and there, that other guy might be faster, but you know that you're going to give it everything you got, you know, and
absolutely. I mean,
there's, you know, and then coming off the track and knowing that I did everything I could, or, you know, even having a junior high kid who, you know, is running a, you know, a 10 minute mile or whatever, but then the next meet they reruns a 9:20 mile, and just to look on the kid's face when he says, Coach, I beat my time, you know. And it's just it's a quantitative sport where you can see the process, you can see the process and how it's going to work, and then the outcome of the process,
tangible evidence of growth,
right? Exactly. And I think that's why You know, powerlifting is another sport where you can see the tangible goals that you've set. And if you put in the work, it shows at the end, you know. Sometimes, though, there is a gap between that work and then the outcome. And sometimes there's a plateau, you know. And but when you do see a kid that overcomes that and figures it out that, you know what, this is more about me competing against myself than anything else, you know. And when that light comes on, you know, very often the next year, those will be football players that you can count on, or, you know,
for sure.
Those are the guys that become leaders because they understand what the work is, you know. And there's just so much about track that is important to programs in general, you know. And I know, you know, it's a busy time of the year and kids are doing all kinds of stuff, but you know, you guys that are out there that are athletic directors and head coaches, you know, I've been fortunate enough to the guys that I've worked for where they were big track people, you know. And you know, it's like, you know, Coach Martinez, you know, mentioned a few times that, you know, the teams with the most kids at regionals are usually the teams that next year in football that are going to be, you know, winning district championships and things like that, you know. And it's just great to be able to see kids compete at the level that some of these kids are capable of when they don't know that they're capable of that. I don't know if I said that to make sense, but once they push that threshold, and, you know, but there's nothing prettier than seeing a kid run a 400 that has struggled in practice and has, not gotten many races go in his favor. And then as the year progresses and you get into district, and then all of a sudden he's hitting his goal time and sees the opportunity to advance, you know, or a kid that comes out of nowhere that you weren't counting on, who all of a sudden, you know, breaks out the ability to sprint, you know, faster than you thought that he could be, you know. And, or, you know, I mean, just take high jump, for example. I'm a big high jump guy, you know, and that's a big mental, it's almost all mental, you know. You can see when they reach the bar, gets to a certain height, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're like, oh, no, this is it. This is where I stop, you know. And it's just a mental thing that once they beat that, you know, I've had kids where they didn't know what height it was, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, don't worry about what height it is. And then all of a sudden they've jumped, you know, a foot higher than they normally would, you know. But it's right. There's a lot to be said for track in just building that toughness, that grit, that programs can benefit from, you know.
I would really say, I do want to close it on this, Coach. Like, I want to get back to the days when it comes to track that we treat it with a childlike mentality. Here's right. what I mean by that. When you're a child, you know, you are willing to take so many risks that are, you know, when you grow older, you calculate, like, man, can I make that jump? What are my consequences to that? What are the ramifications? When you're younger, when you're a little boy, a little girl, like, none of those are calculated. You're going to take the risk no matter what. For instance, you're going to find out if the stove is hot, right? And you're not going to listen to mom or dad saying, like, mijo, this is hot. And you're going to be like, nah, you're going to be stubborn. You're going to touch it yourself and find out if it's hot. That's when we're younger, right? We have the ability to make risks, right? We don't necessarily always make those calculations. I want to approach track with a childlike mindset in that regard, right? Where you're willing to put yourself out there, take those risks, live in the uncomfortable area, right? Because this sport is going to push you to redline often, right? You're going to redline because you're revving it up so much, and you're going to find out what you're made of, and you're going to make sure that you let the competition know, man, I've been putting in that work to better myself.
Yeah, it could be comfortable with being uncomfortable, you know, because, I mean, that's a big part of life, right? I mean, is doing things that we don't necessarily want to do, but that we need to do, right? And yeah, I mean, I think it's a, you know, I really enjoy, especially coaching the junior high kids, you know. The last couple of years, I've had the opportunity to go back and coach the junior high kids as well as the high school kids, and just their, like you said, that mentality where that, I mean, they, oh, we're going to race, like, you know, like, they're not thinking about, oh, like, I'm not fast, or they just know they're going to race and they're going to give it everything they got, you know. Or when a kid first jumps in the sand pit and long jump, you know, I mean, whenever we have tryouts for long jump, there's 40 kids wanting to long jump, you know, and they're not afraid to throw themselves in the sand, you know. And then something happens along the way where they, you know, they get in high school and then all of a sudden they become too cool, you know, and, you know, oh, I don't want to get sand on me. Like, you know, really, that's what you're worried about? Like, you know, last year you jumped, you know, you were a 15, you know, 16 foot jumper as a, you know, a girl in high school. That's, you're good. Like, does it matter the sand or, you know, well, no, I don't know if I'm going to play this year. I'm not going to run track this year because, you know, I don't think I'm fast. And like, well, it doesn't matter. Like, beat your times, get better, you know, and yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that's lacking. And I mean, you know, fortunately, we do have a lot of kids out this year and finding what they can do. But yeah, it seems like every year it does get a little tougher to pull out those kids and get them to, you know, get them to run mile repeats or, you know, a 1, 2, 3, 4 ladder and then back down. Like, you know, I mean, it's definitely an interesting time when it comes to those things because of how challenging they are.
So in closing, if you're a student athlete, right, run track, yeah. Give it your all, put your trust in your coaches, right? They're going to get you better. Don't be afraid of competition. It is what it is. The whole goal is to get better and beat your time, beat your throw, beat your jump that you previously set the day before. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's all it is. Bigger, faster, stronger, right? And if you want to get stronger, you hit the weight room, do powerlifting. If you want to run, if you want to get faster, run track. It's pretty much that simple.
All right, folks. Well, just to close out our segments for today, I did a little bit of reflecting. I'm going to get a little vulnerable here with you guys. You know, just recently, I had my biological father passed away, and you know, it was definitely tough times, a lot of tough circumstances, very confusing. To make a long story short, you know, he didn't really raise me, grow up in my life. I re-engaged with him at age 27, and you know, and you know, we had a relationship. I'm 42 now, so you know, it was just kind of give, little take, you know, type of conversations here. You know, cancer sucks, man, and it took his life, and I did a lot of reflecting, you know, mainly because I didn't know how I should feel. You know, it was a little awkward in the sense because I'm visiting a person. I'm at this visitation and I know he means something to me, but I just don't know the depths of it, you know, because to be truthful, you know, I'm looking at a person that didn't really live in my life. I was raised by my mother, you know, who's a strong mother. I really appreciate everything she's done for me. My stepfather came into the fold when I was a little older. But ultimately, you know, coaches, you know, my friends, you know, they kept me accountable. And so I really want to lean on this about the importance of fatherhood, right? And making sure that people understand the dynamics of what it takes to be a great father, you know, what it takes to be a present father to begin with. And, you know, the things that we really yearn for as a son, you know, the little nuggets of knowledge, the encouragement. And I say that because that's what I was reflecting on. I'm reflective of this journey because I feel like I'm successful. I got here, you know, but I got here despite needing what I was yearning, that fatherhood aspect of it. Right. You know, cause make no mistake. I'm really appreciative of my stepfather. You know, I consider him my dad, you know, but we don't really have those father son conversations until I hit my 20s. You know, I'm already grown, you know, and so I'm missing all of these. And I started thinking, well, how did I get here? You know, and I want to tell you is a lot of it were my coaches. A lot of it was the men that I surrounded myself with that were my friends, that are my brothers, you know. I'll give you an example. Somebody like Sal Thais, head coach at Lanier. Steve Garcia, defensive coordinator at Lanier. Juan Cervantes, head soccer coach at Lanier. These are men that were my teammates, brothers in arms, all the way through, that always held me accountable, right? They were not afraid to tell me the truth, even when I didn't want to hear them. You know, the coaches that helped raise me, guys like Leon McNeil, John Mendes, those are my John Hornbeck. These are Charles Hornbeck. I'm sorry. These are my coaches in middle school that kind of set the formative stages, right? Don Gaddin, Jeff Smith, Rudy Bernard, Carlos Peña, Victor Flores. You know Victor Flores from Dilly. These are the men that really helped me and guide me in the direction that I find myself here today. You know, and really these little nuggets of knowledge and these little acts of kindness and belief really went a long way for me in my development, you know. And luckily, I was raised by a wonderful mother, Maria Morales. I te agradezco mucho. You know, I love you so much. You know, putting me in this situation with the high school I was at with these men. Like, look, let me tell you a little story about somebody like Jeff Smith, right? I am a senior in high school. I don't even know. We talked about senior exit plans. I don't even know I'm supposed to be college football. I don't even know this. I don't even know that's part of my future. And I get a recruiting trip that's planned out for me. I don't even know how to get there. My mom's not going to take me. She's busy doing something else. I don't know how to get there. Do you know, if some of you don't know who Jeff Smith is, right? He closed his career out at Brackenridge High School. That man I love so much because the level of belief and confidence he instilled in me, literally rented a car, paid with his money, and said, "Hey, Ivan and Daniel Berlanga, who was my teammate, go in on this college visit, go explore, right? I trust you. You guys are responsible young men. You guys got, both of you got your licenses. You both got insurance. Like, I trust you. I can't take you. I'm sorry. I do have a primary engagement I got to get to, right? But here you go." Like, how many coaches will go out of their way to do that? Like, I was just blown away. But little things like that show faith in me and belief in me was a fatherhood moment that Jeff Smith was displaying, you know? And I will never forget that. I remember that day vividly. And I remember a bunch of moments that I've had with my coaches vividly. I'm in this profession because of somebody like Carlos Peña, who was the defensive coordinator at Madison High School. I'm in this profession because of him. So I do want to send a message out as I reflected, you know, I was trying to find myself, you know, I'm 42 years old and I'm still feeling like a little boy that was craving some of that fatherhood advice, right? And that's what I was reflective on, but I was also appreciative of the men that were in my life as coaches, as my teammates / brothers / friends, best of friends that I could have. And I'm truly grateful for that. But I just want you to kind of serve it as a reminder for everybody that's within the earshot of this podcast that, you know, being in this profession can really change somebody's trajectory tremendously. It did for me. And we can't lose sight of that, right? Even when times get tough, you know, the fatherhood that we provide, you know, to our surrogate kids, if you will, that we coach, right? It has a lot of value. And then also, to top it all off, I've been overjoyed with the perspective I have as a father, you know, of three beautiful girls, you know, ages 5, 3, and 1, right? Like, now I have a newfound perspective, and then we can't lose sight of making sure that we ensure we're present at home. And they're getting the best versions of us. Because a lot of times we get lost giving the best versions of ourselves to our community and forget the people that, you know, that is our foundation at home. You know, I just wanted to, you know, share this nuggets with you guys because I think this is extremely important. You know, it's just a little bit of reflection and you know, I'm grateful for, you know, this platform to share that with you guys. I'm grateful for guys like Alvi to, you know, join me in my journey and helping me in my development still at age 42.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that, Coach. I think, you know, we've talked a lot about on this podcast about the importance of what we do. And, you know, there's not a day probably goes by where I don't get a message or some type of hit on social media for former athletes and former students and the impact that we have that maybe we don't know we had at that time. And so, you know, we are the fathers to a lot of the kids out there. We are the father figures and the role models of what it is to be a professional and to be an upstanding citizen and something that maybe they don't always get to see at home, you know. And so, you know, thankful for what we do and what we do for all our kids. But it's like you said, at the same time, as we can't lose sight of our own families as well, you know. And sometimes we throw ourselves so hard into coaching, into being there for other people's kids, that it's easy to neglect our own. And you know, we don't get those times back. We've been fortunate to work for some athletic directors that said it was a non-negotiable to go see our kids' events, you know, whether it was a band concert or, you know, Little League or whatever it is. So, you know, I know the old stringent plan is that you don't miss things as far as your coaching is concerned, but at the same time, take care of your families, you know. And I think that's a big deal, because you know, it was, you know, like I just it when you were speaking, you know, I thought about that when you know that hit me a pretty good point there. But when Nick Saban retired this year, is probably the greatest college football coach in the history of college football, and they replaced him within 72 hours, you know. And sometimes, you know, that coach's office will get, that seat will get filled real quick. But, you know, the place at home, you know, the chair at home, if you're not there, is not filled as easily. And sometimes we got to be able to balance those things and be wary of not just being role models for those that don't have, but also for our own, you know. And that's something that sometimes we lose sight of. But
part of that, coach, is intentional too, man. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we're Hispanic men. You know, we know, we understand the machismo aspect of it. Right. You know, it happens in the African American community as well. You know, where sometimes, you know, men are a little bit more of stoic, you know, strong, lead by example, and forget about those words of wisdom and encouragement sometimes. And really don't know how to show vulnerability,
right.
You know. And I think with my stepfather, I mean, like I said, I consider him my dad, man. Like he's done an amazing job when he took over our household, you know. But he didn't know how to open up, you know, and he threw himself at his work, you know. So when I do say things like, you know, I'm grateful for, you know, the guys that helped mold me, like. I have, you know, my friends like that, consider brothers and such, man. They would tell me, like, they weren't afraid. They weren't afraid to show me love, man, and give me the encouragement I need. Of course, you know, we know how to, you know, throw insults, like the best of them, you know, the ribbing and of each other. But like, you know, the true, like, man, you don't understand how great it feels to have my younger brother really tell me how much he respects me, how much he loves me, how much the aggressive hugs he gives me, and said, he tells me, man, you're a role model of me, man. And I know that we're men, and I know we're supposed to operate with, you know, with just mission straightforward, you know, just let's get after it. And, you know, and not really consider a lot of the emotional aspects, but you don't know how much that boosts my confidence and boosts my levels of wanting to get after it, hearing that from my younger brother, you know. And those are the things that I really feel young men need, young women need from their fathers as they're growing up, man, especially young women, you know, and growing up in this world where, you know, men feel threatened by their success, you know, and they need more than ever to hear, you know, that they're not only beautiful, but they're strong and they're fierce and they're just as tough. You know what I'm saying? So those words of wisdom from a father figure is tremendous, and we definitely don't want to lose sight of being able to show your vulnerabilities to accomplish that.
No, not at all. And you know, at the end of the day, those relationships, I mean, we all entered this profession because there was somebody that took the time in us, you know, and we've all had those mentor coaches, you know, Coach Kelly Scholl and David Silva, and you know, the list goes on, and Roberto Salazar, you know, all the coaches that I had in my life that took time, you know, with a kid that was injured for 2 years and then didn't give up on me. And, you know, it's the same thing, you know, but, and we spend so much time with these kids too, you know, even outside of the coaching aspect, you know, just asking, you know, hey, what, you know, it's, I like messing with the seniors, and I'm be like, what are you going to do when you grow up? You know? And they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm like, man, it's February, guys. Like, you got to decide something. If you need help, let me know, you know? And those are the type of relationships that go way beyond the lines on the field, you know, where,
for sure,
you influence these kids in an amazing way. And you know, they'll run through a wall for you, and you know, it's why we do what we do, I guess, right? It's why we do it, because we do want to see those kids succeed. And I love to see kids come back years later and give me some positive feedback on what I've impacted on them, you know, because then at the end of the day, it makes it, you know, all those long days and hours, and, you know, makes it worth it. And, you know, it's what we do, right?
Yes, sir. Because we about that action.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for tuning in. Another excellent podcast again. We definitely won't wait next time. Hopefully won't have a hiatus of a week. It's going to start being tough to come up stuff to talk about since sports going to slow down a little bit. But before we know it, March Madness will be coming around, and the draft and all kinds of stuff. So look forward to next week to seeing y'all again. Hopefully we can get some guests going next week. That's the priority list for next week, is getting some guests on here, so y'all don't just hear our voices all the time. But thanks a lot for tuning in. This has been another episode.
Like, share, subscribe.
Yeah, like, share, subscribe.